Dan, Emily joins us from Philadelphia. She is a partner in a law firm there.
I am.
Hello, hi Dan.
Emily, when did you get your haircut?
It's been a couple of weeks. I'm waiting for it to grow back. It's a little shorter than I
Me
wanted.
too. Me too.
I know. Let's see what happens.
Oh man. All right, we'll give it a few more minutes, wait for everybody to join here.
When is Joya the next trip and where will it be? Or your group, sorry, the group.
Well, they're coming up one after the other. I've got this Friday, I've got Washington, D.C. The next Friday, I've got Philadelphia. The next one after that is just a wedding. I'm back in Wisconsin. My boyfriend's from Milwaukee.
Oh, no way. Wow. He must be happy with the Bucks then, if he's a basketball fan.
He's happy. I don't think he's too happy with the football team.
Yeah.
Football team's name?
Green Bay.
I think they did really poorly because I heard a lot of screaming and yelling in this house.
Yeah, there's some turmoil on that team right now. Yes.
So Bucks, yes. The other one, no. Hi, good morning, Marion.
Hello.
Hello.
What's the name of this football team again? I should know this because I'm actually going to a game in Milwaukee.
Well, it's Green Bay,
Oh, the Packers.
Wisconsin, the Packers, yeah. So
So I'm being made to suffer through a Packers game live in
Lord, you're
Wisconsin.
gonna turn into Joya, you're gonna turn into a cheesehead or whatever they call themselves.
I'm going to like Fleet and Farm and getting as many pieces of goose down my body can sustain for that.
That's totally different than Emily's Philly cheese, right? That's different. Like, Green Bay cheese and Philly cheese and Emily, come on, let's make sure we're clear there.
Marianne joins us from California, so she's on your coast. She is
Ah.
CEO of a company called Ninth Gear, and she's in, I keep wanting to say Foster City, but you've moved from there.
San Mateo.
San
I
Mateo.
moved 2 miles.
San Mateo. Oh my gosh, amazing.
Where are you, Dan?
I'm in Victoria, up the coast, in BC, but I was chief learning officer for several years with SAP. And would make the
Oh.
run. I would make the run down that 101 so many times.
To Deer Creek Road.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Marianne, Michelle and I were marveling at just how the landscape in California is so different than what we're used to here, because everything is flat and made to sustain earthquakes, I guess.
Well, brown is the new green.
That's why you gotta come live in the Northwest. We're emerald green everywhere. It's very lovely up here.
Cold.
Well, rainy. It's raining, yeah.
We're just used to so many tall, well, I mean, where I live, it's just tall buildings everywhere. All right, ladies, let's go ahead and get started. I want to introduce you to Dan Pontefract, who is coming to us from Canada today, and he is the CEO and founder of the Pontefract Group, a firm that improves the state of leadership and organizational culture. He's also the best-selling author of 4 books, one of which you can see right here on the screen, which is Lead, Care, Win. And we're going to be talking today about the kind of leader we want to be. Do we want to be somebody who's just going through the motions? Or are you creating a culture of engagement where every single one of your employees feels valued? Dan, we're going to be talking about 7 tips that you offer in this workshop, and then we'll open it up to questions. So, welcome.
Thanks so much, Joya. Hopefully six, but if we can add a seventh. It's a joy to be here. No pun intended. I guess it's a joya to be here. And when Joya prepped me, sort of what this group and how this forms and what you get up to, I was really excited. First of all, I want to explain a little bit about my relationship with Denise and I, my much better half. We met at McGill in Montreal, and right away clicked because we sort of have almost like role reversal responsibilities where I'm sort of like the maternal person in the relationship and with the family, and Denise is more the paternal. And so I feel at home right now when I'm like hanging out with, be honestly, like a group of women, because it feels like that's my tribe rather than hanging out with men. I would never be, for example, Joya, at a Green Bay Packers game. That is just not my that's not my scene.
I do not want to be at a Green Bay Packer
game. Anyway, if you're a Green Bay Packer fan, my apologies. So I'll just quickly talk a bit, like 1 minute, about why I'm here and how I got here, I suppose. So I've always been in kind of the leadership development space. And so I thought I was going into academia. And so I wrote and I learned a lot about how to be in that leadership space. So I ended up at the Institute of Technology of British Columbia, helping adults change their careers effectively for 7 or 8 years. And then I got wooed into the high tech space, where Saint Marianne, that I ended up as chief learning officer for a high tech company called SAP, and did that for 7-ish years. And then ended up basically at the AT&T of Canada for about 10 years, which is called TELUS. And again, I helped change the culture there. Went from, and some of you might know culture scores, so an engagement score of 47% all the way to 90. And then I went on my own about 4 years ago, and I started writing books a while ago and et cetera. But I've always been enamored and really thinking through what what it means to be a leader of self and a leader of others. And so after I wrote 3 books, I then started thinking about, well, what are these kind of lessons that I've garnered? You know, I just turned 50 this year, so I hopefully have learned something over the past, 25 years of working with people. And I kind of distilled it down to these kind of 9 lessons in the book, of which we're going to just briefly talk about 6 of them and sort of some things that I've noticed over the years. So Joy and I will kind of riff a bit. And then I think we've got lots of time, obviously, for discussion, if I'm not mistaken.
But Dan, the first question I want to ask you before we get to the tips is, from a bottom line perspective, and we talk about this a lot here, from a bottom line perspective, why does it matter to be a leader that matters? How does that impact the revenue generation?
Oh my gosh. So I could share right offhand probably 15 different research studies that are causal. And what I mean by causal, that means they've looked at the performance of the team, the productivity of the team, and then kind of the statistical results of the team or the organization, whether that's EBITDA, whether that's profitability, whether that's share price. And these researchers over longitudinal studies have found out that when a mostly organization or team are engaged, so when the leaders cultivated and inculcated a culture of care, of support, of psychological safety, of empowerment, of empathy, of care, I just kind of narrowed it all down to the word care, then these results kind of go through the roof. So what's the problem, Joya, in my work at least, is that way too many organizations and leaders seek the results rather than building the culture or building the right behaviors. Mm-hmm. And so they've got it wrong. The outcome are the statistical increases in productivity and revenue and profitability, et cetera. That's the problem, is that when the leader or the team, the C-suite, has said, we need to increase our revenue by 20% this year, or we need to bump our share price up 15%, or we need to increase our customer satisfaction by 12%. How do you do it? You do it on the backs of behavior and the team in which that you're, I hope, afforded the opportunity to work with. But if you're not starting with the culture and the behavior and the attributes and the nuance of how people need to interrelate and work with one another, how do you ever get to the outcome? Mm-hmm. And so frankly, like, so many people got it wrong. And I'm not saying everyone's got it wrong, but there are many, many, many leaders and organizations who have it backwards.
So let's get into point number one. How do you be a leader who conveys meaning and doesn't wield just power?
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, there's some questions here that I think a leader needs to ask themselves. I got a few here, so maybe I'll even flip forward to here. So the questions like, as a leader, why am I here? So what's your role as a leader? Are you here for power, for a team increase in size, budget size? Are you here just for the stock units that are awarded every year, the bonus, right? Like, why are you here? And then, equally so, you've got to, Joya, ask the question, well, who am I actually serving? Is it me? Let's talk football for a second, because we brought up the Green Bay Packers, right? Well, what if an entire team was playing for just the names on the backs of their jersey and not the proverbial, you know, crest on the front, if you will, or the crest of the team. What happens is you've got a team of individuals. And so you're not asking the question, well, who am I serving? Am I serving the team members that are part of this illustrious crew that we're trying to work on our objectives together? I could get even existential and suggest, Joya, that you got to answer the question, why are we here in life as a leader? Are we here to serve community? I hope so. Mm-hmm. Are we here to, you know, better the planet in which we can leave it for our offspring and cousins and, you know, nieces and nephews and children? I hope so. So who are you serving, right? Is it just me or is it a greater stakeholder kind of genre? And then, of course, I truly believe if you want to be meaning driven, you've got to answer the question, well, how do I want to be known when I leave a room? Mm-hmm. Do I want to be the bully, the person who didn't answer the emails, the ones who reprimanded people publicly in a meeting, or, you know, someone who knows the names of their children, you know, the team members' children, knows that they love going to the ballet and not a Green Bay Packer game, knows that they, you know, they're just basically paying an interest, right, into who they are as a human being. So that whole notion of playing for meaning to me is about these kind of questions that leaders aren't asking and that gets them into trouble.
So number two, and I love that it's about time because I feel like every week I'm in front of my membership and time management is a pain point. So managing time and transforming your relationship to it is part of the recipe to being a leader that matters.
Yeah, it just so happens I might have put a few thoughts together here. So I call it stay present. And I wrote an entire book about this. So that was my third book. I'm not here to sell books, by the way. But I got frustrated with teams and executives, leaders, people of all stripes, who are, like, quite frankly, frenetic. You know, they're out of their mind busy. When I do time audits, as I suggest here on people's calendars, I ask them to go through a reality check on the time audit and say, why are you always back to back to back? Why is every meeting 60 minutes? Why don't you think about, you know, repatriating your time, you know, which basically means to win it back. And more often than not, the culture that's ensued over the last 5 to 8, 10 years, right, has been we're a meeting culture and we get our work done at night. So what you've got, and you've, again, whether it's APA, so the American Psychological or Psychology Association and other groups that are studying this, you have a horrific number of increases in stress, in weight issues, in drinking and or drug issues. Like, it's convalesced into this nuttiness and zaniness of what are we doing to ourselves as human beings? So I think that leaders and ourselves, we have a kind of a fiduciary responsibility to our own humanity. And we need to be looking at our calendar, our how many meetings do we have? You know, the best one I love, Joya, which is ironic, of course, and that's the meetings to plan for the meeting.
Yeah.
You know, like we have a meeting with the boss, so we better plan two meetings to meet with the boss. Like it's gotten to that. And then, you know, you add to that the reality that we've got texts, DMs, emails, and all kinds of social media going on. Like it's a lot. And so if we don't have, like I call it focus blocks, if we've not put into our calendar focus blocks for me, or call it Dan me time or Naveena time or Jody time, right? Like if you don't have that, then how do you survive? And that's where I kind of see the consequence, right, of where people's stress and, you know, psychological almost unsafeness is coming out.
Number three is embracing a curious mindset. I often say that one of the sort of markers of a member at this academy that I've created is that somebody who continually wants to be learning and continuously is curious about their world. But how does this make a better leader?
Well, let's look at an example, first of all, I think, Joya. So let's look at two. So everyone's heard of Malala Yousafzai. Mm-hmm. So Malala recently earned her degree at Oxford. And now she's going on to a master's, and she's already been anointed to go into a doctorate. How does Malala get to Oxford? Well, because she was, I mean, this is of recent days as well, what's going on in Afghanistan and the Taliban. Well, she was pushing for girls and women to learn. You know, she wanted women to be learners, to be lifelong learners, because she felt as a young girl, kind of a 13, 14 year old, that this was wrong. And so she pushed and pushed and pushed because she remained curious for her own learning. And she wanted a whole generation of women to be able to learn. Now, the Taliban had other, you know, thoughts, and tried to assassinate her. And she recovers from that assassination attempt, goes obviously to England, and goes on to win the Nobel. And obviously, we know the story from Aya Malala. But there's like, I mean, it's a famous story, but it's a story of perseverance, of when you're continuing to look out for your own development and even the development of your team, in her case, a country of women. I think that speaks volumes. I really do. And so for me, I think we can learn from, you know, those examples, and where we just sort of take credence and pay homage to that necessity that we're not done. This whole notion of, you know, remaining curious, like everyone in this group, you showed up today because you're kind of curious about what Joya had on her program, want to have some dialogue. Good, like, kudos. This is amazing, right? But think of maybe your peers, some of your colleagues, your friends who are in a rut. They're in their lane. They're not getting up. You know, they're not realizing that the lane in the pool is full of other lanes and more water. Like, lift up the lane and get over and say, hey, who are you? Could I meet you? Or, hey, what's in your lane? Or that's the curiosity thing I think gets often missed. Alice Coachman is the other example I wanted to quickly bring up, Joya. Alice Coachman, raised in the South, lived in the South, you know, looked at all the white kids when she was growing up, she was Black, and said, oh, they're all learning track and field. You know, they're doing high jump, they're doing, you know, the long jump, they're doing sprinting, and I'm not allowed to, you know, I'm in over here segregated. And so, but her curiosity kept coming back and back to the point where, you know, she went out and found materials, her own stuff, like milk crates and ropes, and she was barefoot, but learned how to do the high jump on her own because she was curious about her own penchant to be an athlete. Till eventually, you know, a local kind of coach at a university was looking around and saying, a white guy said, well, this is amazing. What I can help you. And so he remained curious, if you will, about Coachman's potential. Long story short, she became the first Black woman to win a gold medal at an Olympics in the 1948 Summer Games in London in the high jump. Mm-hmm. So if we squash our curiosity, we might not win a gold medal, if you follow my drift, as a metaphor, as an analogy.
Embracing change. I'm watching season two of The Morning Show, and it starts with a diatribe about the old network executives who don't even know how to embrace change. Meanwhile, everything else has moved up to the cloud. What happens? What happens to your leadership when you're not embracing change?
Well, I mean, it's the Kodak moment. So I mentioned I turned 50 last month, so I guess I'm old now or whatever I am. But that means I grew up in the 80s with the Rubik's Cube, the Pet Rock, but also Kodak. And so everything was a Kodak moment. And when everything's a Kodak moment, you got to kind of peel back the layers of that story and wonder what's the deal with that? Well, Kodak, the company based in New York, right, had 90% worldwide market share of film, and they had 85% market share of cameras. I mean, it was a force. Now, there were three individuals in the basement up in upstate New York, where headquarters are with Kodak, trying to figure out in the mid 80s, digital photography. And after, you know, months and months of trying to figure out how to do digital photography, they figured it out. And they went to the bosses and they said, hey, we figured out digital photography. We know it takes 17 minutes for the image to end up on a computer screen way over here, but we patented it and we figured it out. Let's pursue digital photography. This is like circa 1985. And the execs, the leaders were like, what are you, crazy? Don't you know that we're Kodak? we got 90% market share in film and 85% in cameras. And so they just, they ignored it. And so back to your point, Joya, it's a good one, right, of the show and kind of things going into the cloud. Kodak, which had employed about 150,000 people, now today isn't even a camera company, has about 3,000 employees, fell off every, you know, Wall Street list possible. And then, of course, the Japanese companies picked up the patent. And whether you're Sony or Sanyo or Casio, all those folks, right, they ultimately created digital photography. Mm-hmm. Same story about not remaining curious. Those companies forgot what, you know, Apple was about to do with the iPhone and put a little camera in a phone. And so, you know, BlackBerry is a great example. They're like, no one would ever want to put a camera in a phone. And what happened to BlackBerry? So if we don't remain curious, we can end up on the sidelines, if not out of business, whether it's a company, a business, or yourself. You too could be rooted out because you haven't kept up, if you will, with the change.
Your next point is lead by lifting others up. Yeah. Sometimes that's hard to do because you've got so many pressures you're already balancing.
Yeah. I mean, so we've talked things like, you know, culture, we've talked about busyness, right? We've talked about the need to produce the performance culture that's, you know, in so many different organizations. But really what for me, it comes down to are a few things, right? If you kind of, you know, champion others, as I say, you are acting with civility. So you're, you know, proverbially holding the door, Joya. You know, remember when we went into buildings and we'd hold the door for people who are coming along the other way, right? Behind us. That's kind of what to me is a little bit missing, is that because of that freneticism, the busyness, the me kind of culture and attitude that's enveloped, we need to resurrect that humility, that humble pie, that I'm here to serve others regardless of my stature or my title. And, you know, I think if we were to just start with the basics of that civility, of being humble, of knowing that we're here for others. And when we do champion others, that builds up the culture, that builds up the team camaraderie. And then people ultimately do want to go above and beyond the call of duty because they feel that connection. They feel that you've got their back. Satya Nadella is the CEO of Microsoft, and he has one of the best lines. And HBR has called him Captain Empathy. I've had a privilege to interview him a couple of times. He's like amazing. Anyway, one of his lines is, my responsibility as a leader is to provide air cover for the team. Mm-hmm. And that's really championing others, right? That's saying, I'm got your back. You go out and be curious, try something, fail. Don't worry. The only way in which we're going to move forward is if we keep doing those things. And that, you know, when maybe something goes awry, I've got your back. I've got air cover for you. I just love that line. I think it's a great example.
I love that line too. Your last point is acting with decisiveness and acting with clarity before we turn this over to questions.
Right. I mean, so leaders today, again, we go back to some of the hazards that are getting in the way. When, if I take a positive route here, when they are proactive, collaborative, communicative, when they do three things very well in particular, which is reminding the team of what they're doing, how they're doing, so the progress, and when it's supposed to be done by, whilst providing that kind of guide on the side, coaching ear, so that it's not performance appraisal and reviews, but it's the guide on the side kind of 10-minute coaching instances that allow that what, how, and when to persevere, to manifest, you know, that is clarity. So it sounds weird. Like I've called it, I think it's number 7 here on the actual list here, command clarity. So you're like, really, Dan, you're using the word command? Well, it's not a command and control thing. It's that you have a stature of awareness that you are there for the team, providing the clarity on where we are, how we're going to get there, and what the progress is. And the more you do that, the clearer the team member is, so they're not lost. Take, for example, like the last 18 months. So pre-pandemic, let's just say arguably a lot of people were on site in the office. Pandemic, most of us sent home, And now, whatever we call this, like the almost post-pandemic, right? We're kind of seeing a lot more hybrid work opportunities. Well, when you have people both at home and on the in the office, here is an unbelievable opportunity to create more clarity, because again, not everyone's virtual, not everyone's face-to-face. It's going to be somewhere in between. So holy smokes, do we need to command clarity as a leader these days, even in ourselves as an individual. So that's what I believe.